Well, hello. This is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you are on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And my guest today and his bandmates have been on the road all year celebrating their 50th anniversary. Grand Funk Railroad is one of those bands where literally everyone that's ever turned on a radio knows at least one song, whether it's We're an American Band, I'm Your Captain, Some Kind of Wonderful, or a host of others. They really are the soundtrack of American rock and roll. And I'm so happy right now to welcome original drummer, songwriter, and singer, Don Brewer. Don, welcome.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. And first of all, congratulations on 50 years. When you, Mark, and Mel started the band, rock and roll hadn't even been around for 20 years yet. Can you ever have imagined you'd still be part of this band this far along?
Well, no, I mean, when we started the band, I was, 18, 19 years old. And of course, at that time, you really can't look forward. You thought 40 was probably going to be about as long as you were going to live anyway. You really can't look into the future. I never dreamed that I would be, 70 years old and still out on the road and enjoying and what I'm doing, and actually, my grandkids can come to the shows now, I could never have imagined that this would be the case, no.
And there really have been sort of two eras of Grand Funk, that original run from 69 to 77 and, a couple reunions in 81 and 96. And then this current version, which has been intact since 2000. Talk a little bit about who the lineup has been for the last 20 years.
Well, yeah, we put this band together in 2000 with myself and Mel Shocker, founding members of Grand Funk, along with Max Carl, formerly of 38 Special. Max is the guy that sang and wrote 38's biggest hit, Second Chance. We've also got Bruce Kulick playing lead guitar with us. Bruce is the guitar player for Kiss back in the 80s when they took their makeup off, and they did a whole series of albums as the band, as Kiss without makeup. And Bruce was the guitar player at that time. And I've known Bruce going back to the 80s when I was playing with Bob Seger. He was playing with Michael Bolton, and Michael Bolton was the opening act on the Bob Seger tour. That's where I first met Bruce, way back then.
Okay.
But, he's just a great guitar player. Mm-hmm. And we've got Tim Cashin, formerly Bob Seger alumni as well, and he's playing keyboards and singing backup with us. And, we've been touring now for 19 years with this band.
Which in itself is pretty incredible, because a lot of bands don't stay together that long, let alone something like Grand Funk, which was sort of a second incarnation. Does it feel strange to you that this version of the band has been together longer than the original was?
when we talk about it, it's pretty amazing, but we really just we just kind of go and go and go, and we really don't, it's not something we concentrate on. I think we look at it more like it's a blessing, that the band gets along and everybody, still likes each other. And, we can travel together and, it's nice, like we hear, nightmares about, some of the bands, and they won't travel in the same bus. They won't travel on the same car. They have to stay in different hotels from each other. And it's just, I can't imagine.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I think the fans really appreciate that too, because now for a couple of decades now, they know when they go to see Grand Funk, they have a relationship with these people now. It's not a revolving cast of characters every time.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. We have built quite a following over the past 19 years shows, and not only with the fans and the audiences that we play for, but also with the buyers and the concert buyers and the venues. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of repeat plays, so it's nice.
And you guys tour steadily. I mean, you end up doing about 40 or 50 shows a year for the past few years. Is the road a much different place now than it was back in the original run of the band?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, back in the day, we used to do 40 shows in 40 days. Now, as you said, we do about 40 shows a year. So that's a huge difference. We used to do two albums and two tours a year. We were under contract, with the record company, Capitol Records, back then, to do that. Now we don't have that, and we can spread it out. And we really, this past year, we've we started out, I forget exactly where we started out, but we ended up doing a cruise, and then we were up in Portland, Oregon, and we were, back in the East Coast, and then back to the West Coast, mm-hmm. all over the place. But always in between, we go home, and mm-hmm. it's a wonderful situation to keep a family together is to be able to be home all the time. So, that's a nice deal.
Mm-hmm. And as road tested as this band is, you guys haven't done any new music. Do you have any desire to get back into writing and recording, or is it more of a live experience now?
Well, it is live, but we do new music. We do new music in the show, and over the past 19 years, we've had tons of songs that have come and gone in the show. So we're always working in new stuff and then working it out, after a while and try something new. It's our way of still being, involved in creating new music, and trying stuff out in front of a live audience. I mean, that is always a great way to see if a song or your performance is working. You get in the studio, you kind of get lost on what the ultimate goal is, and that's to please an audience. Playing songs live for an audience is definitely the way to try stuff out.
Oh, without a doubt. And kind of going back to the early days of the band, as I mentioned, I think anyone who's ever listened to music knows we're an American band, but most probably don't realize that was actually on your seventh record. You guys were already an established band, a huge draw. You sold out Shea Stadium faster than the Beatles. Did the overwhelming success of that song kind of take you by surprise, being as though it was seven records into your career?
Yes. I wrote the song, mm-hmm. and really I was trying actually to come up with a hit record, because radio had been changing, from FM underground to where you could have 7-minute songs, and they didn't have to necessarily be commercial and you'd still get airplay. As you got into 1972, all of the radio, the FM radio stations were being taken over and turned into more, commercial enterprises. And they hired, consultants to come in, and they told the jocks what to play, and all of the songs had to be 3 or 4 minutes long so that, you could get work more commercials in. And so I was, kind of experimenting, when I wrote the song, and I was, looking to make it a hit song, but I never would have dreamed that it would have the legs that it's had, and that it came out the way it did, as well as it did. So, it was intentional, but I wasn't really looking for something that was going to be around and turn into, kind of an anthem that it has, that's pretty amazing.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, you pretty much can't go to a live performance, whether it's an arena band or a local band in a bar, without that song being covered. Like I said, I think it's one of the few songs where literally everybody knows every word and every note of it. And we had mentioned the Shea Stadium sellout, and that was the days before, stadium concerts were a regular occurrence. What led you guys to say, well, yeah, we can do Shea Stadium?
Well, it was actually a guy. It was a promoter in New York that came along, and he was actually Tony Bennett's manager at the time. Mm-hmm. He was the one, he said, you can come in and I think I can sell this out. It wasn't us that thought we could sell it out. Mm-hmm. It was the promoter. He knew, I think we could sell, Shea Stadium, so that was the guy. He took the gamble, and he made it work, and it did work, it was amazing an accomplishment. And yeah, at that time there weren't bands, other than the Beatles that were playing stadiums. It was unheard of, I mean, everybody was playing maybe arenas, and the arenas weren't that big, but, now that arenas are 20,000 seats, back mm-hmm. then the arenas were maybe 8,000. 10,000 was huge at that time. It's just a whole different animal to be able to do a stadium.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about those early records, and one thing that always stood out to me, Terry Knight's production on those records, and particularly your drum sound, really stood out and made you guys sound different from a lot of the other bands. You know, and then later on, you had success with Todd Rundgren producing and the record with Frank Zappa producing. Was production something you guys were really involved in, or was that, you know, more the record company?
Well, you know, we got involved actually after Terry left. We fired Terry, you know, because mm-hmm. we found out he was ripping off all the money, and so we fired him. And that's when we tried an album on our own. We went to Nashville mm-hmm. and tried the Phoenix record by ourselves, and we realized at that point that it wasn't good, you know, to be the producer and the artist. You know, you kind of get a little lost in your own self-absorbed ideas, you know. So we hired Todd Rundgren, you know, because we figured he could help us make that transition of FM, you know, changing from FM underground to pop, FM pop right. radio, you know, because he was very, you know, very much involved in that thing. And we just loved the way his record sounded. So we enlisted Todd to come in and help us with that, making that transition. And I loved working with him. I thought he was amazing. You know, you didn't spend, you know, any extra time in the studio. You didn't, you know, go up to take 55. You know, it was, you know, you'd get things done in two or three takes, you know, and make it work, you know, and that way you caught the excitement of playing the song, you know, a couple of times, you know, rather than playing it 50 times.
Right.
And it was just a whole different experience, and I just loved working with Todd, and I think it showed on that record. That was a great record, American Band. I thought it was just a terrific album.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think Todd has always been so underrated as a producer. I mean, the stuff he did with you guys, you know, stuff with New York Dolls and everything. He was,
and the band, you know, he produced, you know,
exactly.
A lot of people don't realize he produced the band too. Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, I think Grand Funk is probably considered the biggest snub when it comes to induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Is that something that bothers you, or do you just not give it a second thought anymore?
You know, I don't give it a thought anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has anywhere near the excitement that, you know, surrounding the nominations anymore, because people have kind of gone, why are they putting that person in, and why are they leaving that person out? So I think it's kind of become, you know, a secondary situation. I mean, how many bands, you know, can you think of right off the top of your head that ought to be in that are not in, you know? And then how many artists, you know, like Madonna, that are in that, you know, probably shouldn't be? I mean, that, you know, it just isn't what it used to be. So it doesn't bother me. I don't think it makes that much difference anymore.
But if it did happen, would the original Grand Funk get back together and play for it?
We wouldn't have any way of knowing that until it actually happened. You know, you'd have to wait until the moment to make those kind of decisions, right?
Do you still have any kind of connection or relationship with Mark Farner or Craig, you know, the keyboard player as well?
Craig, we're good friends with Craig. You know, Craig, we see him frequently. Actually, we've done some shows this past year with Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, and it's always great to see Craig. And Craig, whenever we're in the Michigan, Ohio area, Craig comes out and sits in with us, you know, too. So we have got a great relationship with Craig, and a terrible relationship with our former guitar player and singer, Mr. Farner. So we only speak to him through attorneys. So,
You mentioned Bob Seger a couple of times. I mean, you guys go way back, and people probably don't even realize you played drums in the Silver Bullet Band for a while, and even when Bob was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2004. So how far back does your relationship with Bob Seger go?
Well, you know, back to the late 60s is when I first met Bob. You know, we were both playing in bands that played a lot of teen places around Michigan, you know, and Bob Seger had a band called The Last Herd, and I was in a band called The Pack. I think the first time I met him was a little teen club called Mont Holly, where we were both playing. That's probably when I first met him. And then, you know, as you mentioned, I played as a tour drummer for the Silver Bullet Band, a couple of tours in the 80s, and then, you know, probably five or six tours starting in 2006 through 2015. multiple tours with the Silver Bullet Band, and yeah, we're pretty good, you know, friends with those guys, and we've shared management people at different times, and shared crew people, and shared musicians too. So, yeah, great relationship with all those guys.
And you have a handful of dates coming up over the next few months, finishing up this 50th anniversary tour. What's the future hold for you and the band after that?
Well, we have plans to continue. We're already booking for next year, you know, and we will just continue going on until we stop. I have no idea when that's going to be. I mean, as long as we're healthy and we're going and the audiences want to come and see us, you know, we're going to be out there playing.
And, you know, anyone out there, go on the website for Grand Funk, and all of their tour dates are there. And like I said, you guys have dates going through most of the Midwest out here to the East Coast, coming through September, October, and into November. So we'll keep an eye out for dates even going into 2020. And Don, just again, thank you so much for taking a few minutes today. Again, encourage everyone out there, you know, get out there and check out the remaining dates on this 50th anniversary tour. It's a great band. They put on an amazing live show. And I can't thank you enough for talking this morning.
Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Had a great time.
Great. And we'll catch you on the road. I know you guys are coming back to the Connecticut area soon, so maybe we'll be able to say hello.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks.